It's WNCW's More to the Story. I'm Paul Foster. A Greenville News investigation named Taken examines civil forfeiture in South Carolina and presents an in-depth look into stories of property seized from ordinary citizens. The Taken series includes 6 episodes and articles that just got underway as of this past Monday. The second part of the series is out today, including one called South Carolina Police Make Millions Through Seizure of Property. Greenville News reporters Anna Lee and Nate Carey have put in the work and investigation to bring this series to readers, and they join me right now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
This is not only a big story for you two and the Greenville News, but this may be the first time that a statewide analysis on civil asset seizure anywhere in the nation has been presented.
That would be fair. Experts, professors, attorneys across the country that we've talked with, they've studied the laws and they've studied what happens in their states and at a federal level. And they've told us that one of the difficulties of researching civil asset forfeiture is a lack of data about how police use the tool and who they use it against and how much law enforcement profits from forfeitures. And then what happens to the money or the property once it's seized. Nobody has done an entire state over a period of time.
Anna, let me turn to you. Can you define, break down, what is civil forfeiture?
It's called civil asset forfeiture. It's a state law, but it's also a federal law. It's a civil law that basically allows police to seize your property, whether it be money, your home, your business, your car, and they seize it under civil law so that a person doesn't have to be guilty of a crime or even charged with a crime in order for the police to seize the property.
How did you two go about your investigation? Did you talk to police? Were cases examined? How did it break down?
We examined every civil forfeiture case over a 3-year time period. We started in early 2017 to collect information, and we looked at every case that was filed from 2014 to 2016. We wanted to have several years' worth of data and also current as we could get, with many of the cases being resolved by the time our project launched. We went to every courthouse in the state. About half of the cases we could access online from courthouses. Others we traipsed across the state and dug through filing cabinets and records and took pictures of records or made copies. And then we were able to cross-reference names on those cases to corresponding criminal cases so we could find out what happened, if there was a criminal charge or conviction, or if a case was dropped, dismissed, or if there was no criminal case.
So altogether, there were probably about more than 3,000 cases that we did. We created a database where we could input all of the information that we found in these forfeiture cases. So it would be case number, when it was filed, when the incident of the seizure occurred, and a little description, what agency made the seizure, what property was seized, and the resolution of the case. And then, on the criminal side, was that person charged? What were their charges? Were they charged or were they convicted? Probably the most time-consuming part of this whole project was wrestling with that data. It took probably about a year to get all that information.
What that allowed us to do was to find that there were instances where somebody was never even charged with a crime, and yet their money was still seized by police. And in many times, we could see what happened to that money in that case, that civil case, after that money was seized or property was seized. So we could tell if the law enforcement still were able to prosecute that civil case and keep the money. And it also allowed us to determine, for most people, the race of people caught up in civil forfeiture. And that showed us one of our surprising statistics to us was that forfeiture in South Carolina is used against black people most of all in 7 out of every 10 cases, higher than the arrest rate or higher than the incarceration rate for black people in the state. And it allowed us to see how long these cases took to prosecute, to find some resolution, whether the money was returned, how often the law enforcement agencies were able to keep the proceeds, and then how often they maybe settled a case and split the money with an individual.
The average case we found took over 17 months to resolve. If you're pulled over at a traffic stop, police find cash and they seize it, they kept your cash for an average of 17 months before some kind of resolution happened. That's a long time to go without, your paycheck or even your car.
Let's look at both sides of this. An example of someone that you feature in the Taken series that's been affected by civil forfeiture. And then who did you speak with on the side of the law?
story of somebody who was affected by it. There was an elderly widow who lives in the city of Conway. Her name is Ella, and spoke to her in her living room. She nearly twice had her house seized by the city, first under forfeiture and second time under foreclosure. And the reason was she'd never been charged with a crime, never been convicted of a crime, but she lives in a neighborhood where there is crime happening on her street, and there were instances where drugs were dealt from her yard or her driveway on her property. So police tried to seize her. The city tried to seize her house under that framework. The case went before a judge, a panel of judges actually, and the judges sided with Miss Ella, and she was allowed to keep her house. She had come to an agreement, and there's a long history of this that you can read as part of the stories, but part of the issue was she had come to an agreement with the city that if future drug deals happened on her yard, she'd have to pay an immediate $5,000 fine. They could begin foreclosure proceedings again on her house. So she still lives in fear that the city could try to come back and seize her house, even though she's never been involved in the drug trade.
Ella was charged, but she was charged with like a misdemeanor, she was charged with public nuisance, I think. That's like a ticket.
What about the side of the law in this matter, Anna?
Civil forfeiture basically started as a tool for law enforcement to use to fight against crime. The theory at the foundation of the idea was that the law could go after a drug dealer's crime organization's illegal profits that they made from their criminal activity, and that seizing their profits would, you know, cripple the organization, and then they could then use those funds to pay for other drug fighting programs, canine program, or even a helicopter be used to fight crime, their police cars, to the guns. And that's the way that the law is supposed to be used. You know, the problem is that many of the people who were caught up in forfeiture, and they're not drug kingpins selling huge amounts of drugs. Those who are found with drugs, they're like small personal use amounts of marijuana. In South Carolina, police get to keep, the law enforcement get to keep 75%, and then 20% goes to the prosecutor who prosecutes the case, the forfeiture case, and then 5% goes back to the state's general fund. And so over a three-year period from 2014 to 2016, we found that law enforcement agencies in South Carolina seized more than $17 million using this civil forfeiture program. And those were the court cases that we could find.
I want to make sure it's clear that nobody is suggesting or saying that police shouldn't seize the proceeds of drug dealers or seize a drug house. What has been contested through time is the incentive that those funds, once they are collected or once they are seized, that they end up going back to the law enforcement agency, which creates an incentive to seize if there's a questionable case, to lean towards seizing something and then figuring it out later. So that's one of the big issues that other states have looked at as far as reform.
So with everything you're sharing with me this morning, and you're going to be sharing in this series, have you already heard from some that say there needs to be a call for reform?
There have been instances in the past and attempts in the past to change or reform the state civil forfeiture law. Those bills have been filed, but in the past they've never proceeded out of committee. Most of the time have never even been heard in the committee. There's been bills once again filed, pre-filed in this current state legislature session, two bills that I'm aware of in the House. If any change or reform would happen at the state level, that's where it would begin. There are civil rights-minded libertarian Republicans who are invested in this, and there are Democratic House and Senate members who are invested in this as well from a criminal justice standpoint. Our role as reporters, we wanted to present the information so the public can know what is happening. The decision makers can debate it if they believe the law works as it should, or whether something should change.
We do want to urge everyone that's listening to make sure they follow this series that is just underway called Taken.
Yeah, because there's so much information in the project, we decided to roll stories out online over the course of 3 weeks, Mondays and Wednesdays, and then we'll have stories that will be running in print on Wednesdays and Sundays.
To access any of these stories, you just go to greenvilleonline.com and then /taken.
It's called Taken. Anna Lee and Nate Carey of the Greenville News, we thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.